mutagen that was injected into our blood began to change us in miraculous ways. I saw how your father loved you, and I knew I had to show that same love to the turtles. I became their father, and they became my sons.
Welcome to the Turtles Dojo, a TMNT podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Hey, Adam. I'm so excited to talk about Turtles. This is one of the close, dear properties to my heart. This is my first cartoon that I ever watched. It's my, like, got a lot of my early memories. All my first birthday cakes were the Turtles. I couldn't be more excited to talk about TMNT.
Right, yeah. Just in case anybody's confused, who usually listens to our podcast channel, this is, as we said off the top, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. I am a big fan of this franchise as well. It's part of my childhood. And there are two reasons why I wanted Travis to be part of this endeavor. One is because he's, as he just said, a massive fan of this franchise like I am. But also, I really enjoy podcasting with Travis when we do Tales from the DC Multiverse and our Arrow reviews. So I thought, let's keep the party going and just tackle another property that we love. So that's what we're doing. Travis, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the podcast, which is going to be a review of the first four issues of the Mirage Studios Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book, the original, by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. Let me start by asking you, what is your, like, when did you first get into the Ninja Turtles?
Well, Adam, I will tell you a funny story from my childhood. I was two, and I don't remember this, but my father always told me that when he was watching me, like when my mother was out or working, I said that whenever I would get fussy or cry or be a little savage, a little too much energy for him to know what to deal with, which happened a lot, he said he would just sit me down in front of the TV and pop in a Ninja Turtles VHS from the original animated series.
Sure.
And he said I would just be quiet, wouldn't say a word, sit there and be fully enveloped. Now, this is a stark contrast to my brother, who I remember, because I was 6 years older than him, used to have Barney put on to make him stop crying.
God. And
follow his time. And unfortunately, like, he wore out VHSs playing him so much. So I think he, day I got off on a good deal with me. So from that, there was the original Ninja Turtles movie that I'd seen really young, and Secret of the Ooze, and unfortunately the god-awful TMNT 3. But there are also some hidden gems. The 2003 animated series is very underrated. That's Slipknot a lot. It got me back into the Turtles when I had a little bit of a break. And the greatest story I think I have is My grandparents had a 50th wedding anniversary, and my father had it on VHS. So when I was about 15, the movie channel got the rights to the Ninja Turtles movies and played them late at night, I can remember. We had no spare VHSs in the house, so I recorded over my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary the first two Ninja Turtles movies. And that was fine and dandy, and I didn't think anything of it. I put it back in. It still had 50th anniversary on it. So about a year and a half later, my grandparents came to visit, and my father went to put in the VHS so we could watch the 50th wedding anniversary. And honestly, Adam, it was like the moment before he put it in, I realized, and I was screwed because like my grandparents were sitting to the left and right of me, so I couldn't get up and get out of the room. And honestly, it showed them, and it showed my grandmother putting a bit of cake into my grandfather's mouth, and then it cut out, and then it went to the streets of New York to open the first Ninja Turtles movie. Let's just say that that didn't go over well. I got grounded for no, it was a 10-day grounding. School, home, nothing else. So yeah, everyone can know like the Turtles are very dear to my heart. I'll gladly let people know that my dad got another copy of the 50th wedding anniversary, so everything was okay. But that was a very funny moment that I'll never forget.
And this is why everybody should be thankful why we have Blu-rays now, and also why we have iTunes.
Streaming services.
Yeah, exactly.
Amen, man. Amen.
Well, I don't have a story like that to top it. So, I mean, I think recording over your grandparents' 50th anniversary is that should win an award or something.
Yeah, so, I think Eastman or Laird should hear about that. Because
yeah, give him a signed comic, or, you know, that's a signed copy of number one. You know, it's
pretty ridiculous for me to
do. That's pretty funny. But yeah, my story is not that funny. But my first memory, obviously, was the cartoon, the original cartoon. And I remember just liking the fact that the concept was weird. I mean, it's four mutated humanoid, you know, looking turtles who could do martial arts. I mean, that was the coolest thing in the world. And for the purposes of the animated series, they had these cool color-coded bandanas on for masks. And you know, I dug their weaponry. So I was instantly like, wow, this is fantastic. I don't know what this is, but I want to watch it. And I did. And I remember I was always torn on which turtle was my favorite between Leonardo and Raphael.
Ooh, it was Mikey all the way for me.
Because I'll tell you why. Because I always gravitate towards, you know, like the leader character. So like in Transformers, it'd be Optimus Prime. Yeah, that's why Superman is so cool, because, you know, the Justice League, he's the head of the Justice League, right? And also, blue is my favorite color for obvious reasons. You know, the Leafs are my favorite hockey team. They wear blue. You know, Leonardo wore blue. So I really gravitated towards that. And Raphael, I just loved his, like, angry sort of attitude. And he's got a little bit of a meaner look in the cartoon, you know, more rugged. And he's just, he's short temper, right? Because it's funny, because, you know, as a kid, when something goes wrong, we all tend to have that short fuse. So you could relate to somebody like Raphael. The only issue for me was that his bandana was red, and that was the color that the Leafs arch rival hockey team, the Montreal Canadiens, wore. So I was kind of conflicted. I'm like, well, am I allowed to like this guy because he wears red and that's the color that I don't know. So, but I ended up liking them both. So it's really a toss up between the two, and it basically my favorite depends on my mood any given day. So that's that. That's not to say I don't like Donatello and Michelangelo, because I do. It's just I gravitate towards those two. And in terms of the movie, the first movie was the second movie I ever saw in theaters.
Ooh, very nice.
The first being Batman 1989. So it's a good 1-2 punch in terms of first two theater going experiences. I do like Secret of the Ooze, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is not that great, but even though it's the worst of the bunch, I'll say there are some moments that I do enjoy from even that third one.
That's very civil of you, Adam. That's very civil of you.
And then if we're going further than that, I really do like and I'm just speaking films right now.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the, 2007 animated film?
Yeah.
I do enjoy that one quite a bit because it kind of harkened back to the first two in a way. In terms of the reboot franchise from, I think it was 2014 and
2016,
2014, you are
right.
Yeah, again, elements that I enjoy, but also things that I think they got wrong. And we'll discuss all of these in reviews, obviously, down the road in this podcast. But those are just my initial thoughts. As I said, my starting point was the original cartoon. I love the 2003 reboot as well. There was the CGI animated series that started, I believe, in 2015, right?
Yep.
And at first I was like, I don't know how this is going to go, and I kind of tuned out, but then I started tuning in and I kind of really liked it. And now they have this other one, Rise of the TMNT. I'll be honest, I haven't watched it. I know that it's more geared towards children, which is fine. My issue is not the tone. My issue is the animation. And that's something about me that if I cannot enjoy the animation, the story could be Oscar worthy. But if the animation turns me off, especially if it's an animated series, I can't watch it. So that's where I am with that.
That makes sense too. Adam, I have to ask you, all the movies stacked up, which one do you think is the best one to date? For honoring the material, for presenting the turtles, for it all.
Okay, my personal favorite is the first one from 1990. Same. However, I will say that the sequel, Secret of the Ooze, has a lot in common with the animated series, whereas the first one has elements of the Mirage comic book that we're going to talk about. So it's those two that are my personal favorites, but number one gets the edge.
Same here. I think that number one is with the Jim Henson costumes and the way that I think the Secret of the Ooze really suffers because the turtles don't use their weapons because of so many parents writing and phoning in complaining because just one thing out of context, but when they're caught in the net and they can't get out and they're going towards the sharp objects in the second movie, I'm like, Leo, you have your swords in your back like holsters there, you could just whip them out and cut the net. So that is something that always really drove me crazy, but still, I find a lot of good in that movie, like you.
Right, exactly. So that's where we are. There's also, the more recent animated movie, which was the Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which we'll cover. Definitely we're going to cover that. So yeah. We'll talk about those, but in terms of the live action and some of the cartoons, those are just my initial thoughts. But again, over the course of this podcast, we will delve into as much of this material as possible. So keep a listen and look out for that. Tonight's show now is going to shift over to, as I said, the first four issues of the Mirage series that kicked off this whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles craze. The version of the comics that I read came in a deluxe volume on Comixology, which it was volume one of the classics, and it's black and white. And it collects the first seven issues, but we're going to deal with the first four here because actually Travis is fortunate enough to have the physical books of those first four. And so we're going to talk about those four. But so, Travis, what did you think of these first four issues? What are some of your thoughts?
Very innovative for the time. We were talking about a little bit off air. I love how in the second issue, when April O'Neil encounters the turtles, when they're going to explain to her the like their origin again, most comic books, especially back then, would just do the origin again and just use more pages so they wouldn't have to develop more of a story. Like, that could have took an extra two pages to tell the origin again to April O'Neil, but instead they just go back to the first TMNT issue to find out the origins, which I thought was a masterful way to try to get people to buy the original issue again, because it sold out like hotcakes. But one of the things that really sticked out to me is killing the main villain in the first issue. That was unheard of at the time, and Eastman and Laird both explained that they didn't think they were going to have a second issue. They didn't think anyone would like the comic, so they just wrote it the way that they thought they did for a one-off.
Yeah.
That was a little astonishing to me. And another astonishing thing is how much of those first four issues is taken out and put into the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which that's really surprising, especially considering the cartoon was on the go at the time. You see where it went a little bit more cartoonish in the second movie, but the first movie really sticks close to this story. The Shredder fight, the rooftop fight, it's all there. And it's such an action-packed, fast-paced first issue. Like, it really throws you in and doesn't take time to guard your hand and walk you along. It just drops you into the story, and it's such a great job. And then you can tell that they're just going on the fly. We get things like Mousers that just blew me away and still blows me away for the time. They're still being used today in any of the Turtle games, movies, animated series.
I hated those things in the games.
They were so annoying, especially Turtles and Turtles 3. They were super annoying in that sewer level. Manhattan Project, shout out, very underrated Nintendo game. Those are the things that really stuck out to me. And the Utram reveal at the end, I didn't know the backstory as much when I was watching the 03 Turtles cartoon, so I didn't realize that they were pulling stuff from the first initial run. I thought they were making this stuff up as they go.
Okay.
So to see that Eastman and Laird had this stuff thought of this early is just impressive to me. Like, it's a very well done comic for back in that age, and you can tell that they were allowed to do whatever they want. Like, they literally stabbed Shredder through the chest with the sword. So actually, they offered Shredder to shoot the sword first to stab himself through the chest to do like
an honor sacrifice kind of thing.
Honor sacrifice kill, like a when you fail thing. We see this in the Wolverine, for example, the movie, when the atomic bomb goes off and Wolverine is there. A lot of the Japanese warriors are doing that. So yeah. Just to see them even do that in a comic back then, you can tell, first of all, comics were not marketed at children, not these comics. And second of all, to see how quickly they went from adult people to targeting kids with the animated show and that, just shows what kind of monumental moneymaker they had. They had no idea when they were making it. And the other thing I want to say is the nods to Daredevil with the hand and the foot and Stick and Splinter.
Right, and yeah.
The chemicals, it's all there. Like, it's fantastic.
How have Marvel and now IDW not done a Daredevil Turtles crossover?
I don't know. It's crazy that, like, you get Batman and the Ninja Turtles, but you don't get Daredevil with them.
We even have now Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles. Have you read that, Travis?
Yeah, I've read the first few issues of that as well. And I guess Marvel doesn't want to work with them.
I think 3's up, by the way, so you should pick it up.
I definitely should.
I don't know. Marvel, get on. Yeah, I mean, Marvel, look, I don't buy any of your books physically, but if you do that kind of crossover, I'll start buying them.
You're not talking about the Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles crossover on TV, are you?
No. I'm talking about the good one, the comic one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so in just some of my thoughts on the comic, I'll be right up front and honest with you guys. This is the first time that I'm reading the original comic, the Mirage take on it. And I'll go on and say, just to preface this, my favorite Marvel comic hero is Daredevil.
Oh, nice.
So when I see the similarities, like you mentioned, you know, Splinter with the stick, the hand, and the turtles have the foot, and then the kid getting doused with the chemicals in the face. Right away, I'm like, okay, I mean, if I was, let's say, just dropped on this earth yesterday, and the first thing that I saw was two books, you know, Daredevil and Ninja Turtles, I picked them both up because those ideas kind of interest me. And so, having read Daredevil, now with the experience of Ninja Turtles, the parallels, you know, are obvious, but I mean, and I'll never forget it. When I first read a Daredevil comic, it was just before the movie, so I went to the comic shop and got some, I think it was The Man Without Fear or Born Again or one of them. I think it was Man Without Fear, The Fragment or whatever, yeah. And they did the origin in that, right? So I'm like, wait a minute, as I'm reading, keep in mind this is the first time I'm reading Daredevil, I'm like, wait a minute, this is the Ninja Turtles origin. The hell's going on here? And then, of course, you realize Daredevil came first and blah, 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 and the whole nine yards. But, that came probably, that clicked to me in 2000, and whenever Daredevil came out, 2003. That's when that clicked in my head. So, you connect it to Daredevil, anything that has that similarity, I'm going to dig. It's similar to how, like, when I was a kid, I really love Zorro, the old Disney black and white show. And I love Batman, which, you know, Batman was, you know, part of Batman was modeled after Zorro. So it seems like with both big companies, I have I tend to frequent characters that are inspired by other characters that I love. So it's weird how that works out, but that's how it works out. What I love about this comic is that it's in black and white. I don't know what it is about black and white comics. Part of the thing is that they're so rare. And then the other thing is that I think there's so much of the artist's detail that you can really focus in on when it's in black and white. You just gain a different appreciation for the artist. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That makes perfect sense.
And I got to be honest with you, I was kind of shocked at the level of violence that this book showed. Like, when they're fighting Shredder and they're landing hits, both Shredder and the Turtles. You can see what appears to be blood splatter. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is awesome, right?
I think that's how they got away with it too, Adam, with black and white comic style. I don't know if they could market that as much as they could if they had it in color.
Right, but also, you got to remember, like you said earlier, it was an independent comic at the time. And it wasn't marketed to kids, so they could still get away with it. I mean, if they tried that on the cartoon,
obviously. Oh, good Lord.
The censors would be like, no. But that shocked me. And then, you know what I loved about it? There are a couple of things that I also loved was that when it opens, the turtles are already the turtles. And you open right in the midst of a fight.
Yeah. And the Purple Clan, I think their name is.
Yeah, which I wonder if that's a nod to the Purple Man in Marvel, but who knows.
It may very well be.
And what I like about opening on the turtles already establishing in the midst of the fight is Leonardo's narration. Like, he's telling you what they're doing, you know, each of the characters, their weapon, and how they're positioned, and the strike they're going for. That detail of the fight, for me as a martial artist now, I loved it. Like, describing his process was really cool. And again, that's a Daredevil nod, because, you know, the superheroes we read now, Batman and Daredevil, they all have these inner monologues, right? So.
Oh, yeah, that's right out of Daredevil and right out of just even martial arts in general and martial art movies back then.
It reminded me of that. I also, again, this goes back to them being already established. I like that we found out their origin with the Turtles, and it was told as a flashback.
Yes, and I also like how Splinter is in this iteration in terms of their master. He's not made to be as feeble as he is in the movies.
Right.
Like in the first movie.
In the movie, I get what you're saying. Correct. Is this what you're thinking? He was more like Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. There you go. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. But I just find that being told the story along with the turtles puts you as a reader, like, in their position, so it's as if you're in the story, as opposed to when you're reading it, you know, like if it starts from the moment where the truck has the accident and then the canisters hit the kid, it's like you're watching it like it's a show or a movie, so you're a spectator. But when they have you learning the origin with the turtles, it's like you're right there in the sewer with them. I don't know what it would smell like down there, but it's like you're there with them.
Well, I always wanted to go in the sewers because of that. Every manhole, like growing up, every manhole cover, I honestly thought that the turtles were down there when I was really young. So honestly get that exact feeling.
I hope that you've learned your lesson from now on, because otherwise, I just want to tell you, could be toxic down there. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, my dad was on the ball and never let me go close to the manholes or the covers. I was not an idle kid. I couldn't sit still. So yeah, they were watching me 24/7.
I was surprised by how much this reminded me, especially the first issue of the movie, especially the Shredder stuff. And the explanation of, you know, the Master Yoshi, and how Splinter was a pet of him, and he learned martial arts through watching him and mimicking his movement. I like that far better than learning through a picture book, i.e. the 2014 reboot. Stupid idea. I just going to say this, and then I won't go on the topic now. That's for another day. But as a martial artist, the idea that you could learn you know, high-level martial arts by looking at a picture book, for somebody who's put, you know, 26 years of service into learning martial arts, I find that very insulting. Thank you.
I think it even insults the viewers.
So Paramount, don't do that ever again. But just how like the story that he was a pet, and he learned by watching him train, and then the thing that really confused me off the start was when they introduced the Shredder's backstory. They kept talking about this guy, Oroku Nagi, right, with an N. And I'm like, wait a minute, Shredder's name is Saki with an S. What the hell's going on here? Did they change it when it was? But then it's revealed that Oroku Saki is the younger brother of Oroku Nagi, who was killed by Yoshi because they fell in love with the same woman, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting twist that in the modern comics is not there. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. So that kind of surprised me. And then you're right. You know, when the turtles are like, okay, first of all, when Splinter says, I want you to kill him and avenge my master, I'm like, did he just order the turtles that I used to watch when I was, you know, 3, 4 to kill somebody?
Well, they basically told them to go deliver this message of a death battle to the Shredder, and then he sent his 4 sons that in any other iteration he's super protective of to go kill this fellow that he has a mortal grudge with. Not turtles don't have any grudge against Shredder. They don't have anything to do with Shredder. They're oblivious to the backstory of Shredder besides Splinter telling them it. And this is all for Splinter's revenge. So it's very funny when you think about it.
Yeah, they're like his
assassins.
Exactly, like it's like the mafia. I'm like, what is this? The Godfather? Setting him, you know. But I'm like, this is cool. And then it goes further, like you were saying, with the the honor killing, kill yourself as a sacrifice and whatnot. And but he doesn't do it, and then you know they stab him, and then
he tried to throw a thermal grenade, I think is what it's called, something like that.
Yeah, he tries to kill them all. Yeah.
Danny hits him with the bow staff, and
yeah,
it's kind of funny looking back on the first movie too, because Casey Jones straight up commits what everyone's supposed to believe in the movie is murder.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he just says oops and everything's okay.
Yeah, and then of course he falls off the building, and that's supposedly what we think is the end of Shredder. And again, like you, I like that April's told the story, and they're like, you know, P.S. if you want to know the origin, go back and buy #1.
Yeah, it just says an hour later, and then it shows her saying, "What a story."
That is just great marketing.
You're very smart.
It's and almost also, like I would have liked an expanded thing where it says, screw you people, go buy the first one.
Well, it basically tells them that, and they're like, we're not going to waste pages. We're putting this out with our own money. We're not going to waste pages.
Exactly.
Retelling the same origin story we did in one. The people who bought one don't want to hear that, so we're going to go and utilize these pages to tell more of a story, which I thought was a fantastic idea.
So when they start introducing the Mousers, Travis, you know, one of the first things we see is a lot of things that are staples of today's IDW comics, which is April is working as an assistant with Baxter Stockman. But I love that very quickly. At the first page or two, you think, oh, Baxter Stockman, he's this inventor. You know, he's very forward-thinking. He's a, you know, rich guy. Maybe he's a philanthropist. And then very shortly, he realized, no, he's using these Mausers to rob banks, and he's holding the city a ransom, and he's threatening to have buildings be sort of, you know, bombarded and
demolished, really.
Yeah, demolished by these Mausers. I just... And there was the part where he specifically mentions, you know, if you don't pay me this amount, I think it was 900,000. I'm like, gee, you could have asked for a million.
You're gonna go tough times back in the 80s, Adam.
Yeah, well, he threatens to like take down the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh wow. And I'm like, I mean, your hindsight is 20/20, but it's just like, holy crap, that just became, even though it's, you know, decades earlier, that just became very real world very quickly.
And yeah.
I kind of like the fact that, yes, Baxter Stockman was this over-the-top megalomaniac, but positioning him as a terrorist makes it, and using the threat that he did, makes it very real-world times that we're living in. And then there's a part where April's like, okay, you're nuts, I'm leaving. There was a second, I'm like, and he says, as she's walking away, well, you got to do what you got to do. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. He's not just going to let her go, right? I'm like, that would be lazy writing. But sure enough, he didn't.
He even addresses that and says, I'm not going to allow you to go and turn me in.
Yeah, but it was like a page and a half before he said anything. And I'm like,
same thing I thought as well, Adam. And the other thing I'll say is she even says what you're saying about, this is not the Baxter Stockman that I work with. He's such a nice person and all this stuff. When in reality, he's the big crook of the second issue.
Right. And like, I like that, you know, of course, you know, the Turtles are aware of this because they hear this on the news about the, you know, the Mausers, and instantly Splinter and the Turtles see that as a threat, you know, to their home, to their safety. So they take action, and then that's how they save April. But I like that in the course of saving them, Travis, it's not an easy, we're here and you're safe and let's get out of here. I like that they had to work for it. And there was a legitimate moment where, okay, take away the fact that in hindsight, like, you know, 30-some-odd years later, you know that, well, yeah, the Turtles survived and there were more adventures and blah, blah, blah. But in that moment, there's a very real chance that they could lose and they could, like, the stakes are real.
Oh, yes. Like, especially they established that in the first issue with killing the main villain. You're like, okay, anything can really happen here. This is pretty crazy. And I can only imagine reading it. You could have expected maybe they might lose a turtle or two. Like, we haven't really had this four-person team very much. And after killing the main guy in the first issue, you're like, anything can happen in these books. And it's a couple pages before it gets resolved. It's not like just in the top corner something's happening, in the bottom corner they finish it. Yeah. No, it leads you to believe that they're not going to get the job done. And I also like, when you're talking about that, this is the first time it showcases Donnie's tech savviness.
Yeah.
So it's something that will stay with the character for forever. And I just love that.
Yeah, and you know what I got to say too? I mean, we haven't mentioned this yet. But before I move on to that, I want to say the panels where it looks like the Turtles are going to be overwhelmed and basically swallowed by these Mausers, the use of space, like, that page is full. And even as a reader, you feel claustrophobic, like you're being closed in on. And it's a great piece of art. It really is. But onto the Turtles' personality. You're right. Donnie is, you know, basically Donnie from issue that we're used to from issue two. Raph is the brash, you know, hot-headed character that we know right from issue one, and especially in this second issue where he, you know, his first thing is, okay, we gotta, you know, let's fight, and you know, Leonardo's trying to come up with a plan and everything else, and then so they're the same. I think Michelangelo, there's playfulness to him, but it's not as overt as we're used to yet.
No, it doesn't. It's not quite there yet.
Like, there were scenes in the first issue where, like, Michelangelo's excited to, like, train. And I'm like, when has Michelangelo ever shown as being excited for training?
Oh, never. And also, in this, it's only Raph, Danny, and Leo that saves April and finds her.
Yeah.
That, and like, they're just like, Splinter's like, oh, hi, welcome. Oh, and yeah, Michelangelo's been home. He's been home the entire time.
And I love the fact that, you know what, there's not even one pizza in sight yet. And, you know,
nope.
We've gone through four, you know, as of our reading, we've gone through four issues, but there's not a pizza in sight. And I'm like, hey, where's the pizza? Like, even I'm, but by the way, you just podcast note real quick. If Travis ever comes to visit me here in Toronto, we're going to do one of these recordings live and we're going to have pizza just as to honor the Turtles. So.
And we'll be coming back from a Leafs game. So.
Yeah,
people get ready. People get ready for that.
We may be really angry like Raphael by the time we come back from that, but who knows?
maybe the pizza will help us turn into Mikey's.
Yeah, exactly. but so they and I love the fact that number like issue one and issue two were basically separate, you know, beginning, middle, and end stories.
Yeah, issue three is where we pick up. From right, what happened
yeah,
in issue
right
two.
Right from where issue two left off, yeah.
Where Splinter is abducted by the Magisters.
Right. And, you know, so the Turtles find a way out and they send April on her way and she gives him, she gives them their number because there's no such thing as a turtle signal. So she can't light it up in the sky and call them. Or vice versa, so she exchanges numbers, and she says, if you need me, call me. Then they head back home, and like you said, the place is in shambles, and Splinter's gone, and what I liked about it is, you know, remember when Splinter told April that, you know, the boys have really gone past my, you know, well beyond my teaching, you know, they can do this on their own, right, they're capable now. But it's interesting that when Splinter is missing, you really get the sense of how much they really do need him.
Yes, and also, Adam, this backs up what you were saying about Raphael, because here we see total hothead Raphael, because Leo's trying to develop a plan about finding Splinter, and Raph's like, no, I want to kill people. I should have killed that stupid Baxter Stockman when I had the chance.
Yeah. And he takes off.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole thing they need a place to live. So three quarters of the issue involves the police chasing April's van because it looks identical to a van that was involved in a robbery.
So, yeah, and they think that the turtles are just people wearing costumes, masks, so that they can get away.
I gotta tell you, Travis, that was a really exciting car chase.
And they didn't even care. April even says, like, we may have really hurt somebody. And Leo's just like, nah, I don't think we did. And she's like, okay, but still.
If anything, they're just banged up, you know. It reminded me of, remember the car, the Batmobile chase in Batman Begins?
Oh, yeah, that was Damaged City, hello.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that, where Batman's like, "Eh, it's fine," and Alfred's like, "Look at all the chaos." Same kind of thing. But like I said, you know, the book is in black and white on paper, and that was a really exciting car chase. Like when they reboot the Turtles, and there is going to be a reboot coming, I want to see this car chase in the movie. I don't think we've seen one on this level in any of the films so far.
No.
And I think it'd be great. So, you know, they eventually cleverly catch up to the van that was involved in the robbery. And they sort of elude the police, and the police catch up with the actual van. So they head out to, you know, blow off some steam and they find, as they get into a battle with the Foot Clan, they come across the TCRI building. But it's daylight, so they don't go in to investigate. But they remember that they have this epiphany that was, you know, they remember the story that Splinter told them. And so they know that it's connected to their origin. So they're like, okay, Nightfall will come back and think. But at the very end of the issue, when the Turtles leave, we're taken inside the building. And we see Splinter is in a hospital kind of room. He's hooked up to all the machineries, and there's kind of like scientists saying, okay, let him recover and blah, 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 blah. And we see, you know, they're sort of in, like, these scientists or doctors or whatever are sort of in the break room. And they're like they look robotic, but they have in their stomach, they have the species that is Krang. What are they called?
Utrams or Utrums? I'm always struggle with that one.
Okay. So and then Splinter's like, where am I? So he's kind of sneaking around the building. He's like, I got to peek in through this door just to see what the heck's going on. And then he sees them. But I love Splinter's mode of peeking, which is, I'm not going to just peek and like not let them see me. I'm going to full on walk into the room. And as I'm reading, I'm like, sir, that's not peeking. That's walking into the room. There's a big difference.
Maybe you should take off out of there. But although in Splinter's defense, those little aliens do not look like they will pose a threat to him when they're not in those bodies.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. So issue four, and I gotta say, the art does a really good job of making those things look ugly. They look disgusting.
And they still use the same design today that they did right there. So that's another testament. And in issue four, Adam, we get another fight with the Foot Clan, and it is another badass, several pages of badassery.
Oh, yeah.
We get quips, we get the whole nine yards of the Turtles.
The fights are extremely well choreographed, very well.
Yeah.
So then, when the Turtles get inside the building, they're doing more sneaking around. They're doing the proper method of peeking and sneaking. They get a hold of a key card that opens up locked doors. And they go.
They grapple up to the building.
Oh, yeah. I love that! It was very Batman 66, and I kind of loved it.
Yeah.
So they get in, and they eventually stumble into the room where Splinter is, and he's hooked up to. Like these kind of like electronic metal wiring and all this. And, you know, they're all, most of them are panicking. I think three out of the four Turtles are panicking, thinking, oh my God, Splinter's dead. And Raphael snapping is like, I'm not going to let them display your body like this and blah, blah, blah. And then Donatello's, you know, the rational one saying, guys, you know, he's not dead. He's in suspended animation, like life support.
One's even crying at him. I remember that
really. Yeah, you see the tears. Yeah. And again, it just shows you the detail in the art. That with everything going on the page, you can spot that. And your eye really gravitates towards that turtle's tears. And then, of course, you know, the Utrams with their host bodies come in. It felt very much, whenever I saw those, I thought of that old horror movie, you know, The Revenge of the Body Snatchers kind of thing.
Yes.
So another fight ensues, and they're very protective of this machine, this transmutation. So what was it called? Transmatter, transdimensional, something like that. Machine. And the fights, again, in this issue, in this particular scene, are very chaotic, is the way I would describe them.
Yeah, they're also, like, they take place in multiple, like, they're hiding from them, they're trying to go through doors. It's a whole thing.
The layout is great, very unique. Again, it's very well choreographed on the page. But then, in the course of the fight, the machine gets triggered, and the sequence is some kind of countdown sequence is started. And then all of a sudden, the turtles sort of start disintegrating, and it looks like teleportation.
Yes, and one of the turtles dives into the beam thing, teletransporter thing, saying, "Don't leave without me."
Yeah, and then it says, "To be continued." What a cliffhanger.
Oh my God, crazy cliffhanger.
So, Travis, you have not read any further, so you don't know where it goes?
Haven't read it in a while.
But you have read it.
I have read it.
Okay. So, we're not going to spoil where it goes. You know, what we're going to do now is we're going to give our overall thoughts on this issue, or this four-issue story. And then we're going to grade it. So, Travis, overall thoughts?
Loved it, Adam. I'm so thankful that it existed because this inspired a hell of a lot of the first movie, which is my favorite turtle property of all time. I love the fight with Shredder. I couldn't believe that they went this far for a comic that's this old. Like, I couldn't believe they were able to go this far. I guess being independent is the only way. And it shows that, like, you wouldn't have an Image comic. You wouldn't have The Walking Dead. You wouldn't have Spawn or other characters like that if these guys didn't trailblaze and get this out there and make it such a phenomenon when the two big hitters wouldn't have anything to do with them, DC and Marvel. They rejected them all the time when they sent them in any sort of thing trying to write for them. So I just... First of all, I'm so happy about it. And like we've already said, the action in this is fantastic, especially for an early 80s comic. So just to see it and see how much the Turtles took off from this comic, but also see how faithful that first movie was to this comic, I'm just very happy that it exists. And I think that it's very groundbreaking for independent comics.
Yeah. For me, I thought it was unique with the black and white presentation. It was jarring in terms of the violence and how it was really written for adults, and there was no, you know, winking at the reader or anything of that nature. You know, and I like that. Even like what this book shows is that when an idea and a concept is good, it may be the weirdest thing in the world, but you just go with it because the story is being told very matter-of-factly, very seriously, and the creators writing it believe in it, and also it shows how lasting these concepts and characters are, because a lot of the stuff presented in this first four issues is still in play today. It's been reinvented, you know, the story's been slightly changed, but a lot of these characters and storylines are still in play today in the current comics. Yes. So it just shows you how incredible this idea and this concept and this original run of four issues was. I loved it, and I was just as enthralled. Even though I'm very familiar with the Turtle story, the best compliment that I can give it is that it felt very familiar yet entirely brand new all at the same time, and I absolutely loved it.
That's pretty much spot on for what I had the first time I read it too, Adam.
So with that said, Travis, how do you want to rate this? You want to give it a number grade, a letter grade? What do you want to do?
I'm going to give it a number grade, and I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10. It loses a 0.5 for killing off the one of the best bad guys of all time. Nobody knew like what was going to happen because of it. But Shredder is one of my favorite characters, so it just you just miss him a little bit in the grand scheme of things.
But is he really dead?
Yeah, well, there's just two of these four issues.
I see your point, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a full 10 out of 10, and here's why. Ooh. Like I said, love the art was gritty, and it was gritty, but so detailed and so immersive. But what I liked about it was, in terms of the story, was there is that element of shock value, and I can't believe they had the guts and to steal a wrestling phrase from Mick Foley, the testicular fortitude to kill such an awesome villain right off the bat, like in your first issue. That takes up guts. So I got to give him credit for going for it, not leaving anything to chance. They didn't know, you know, if they'd have an issue too, so they went for it. And so I give them a 10 out of 10. And I got to say thank you to both Eastman and Laird, because when I watched the documentary on the Turtles and realized that they came up with this idea in their basement, and it was a totally, you know, creator-owned idea, that inspired, when I watched the documentary, it inspired me to create my own comic with a friend of mine, which we did. We created one issue. We're going to do more, but had I not seen that documentary and had I not been so fascinated by how they came up with it, I don't know if I would have gone through with my putting my idea into motion. So not only did they give me these great characters and great stories, but they also gave me inspiration. So I got to thank Eastman and Laird for that as well. But that's going to wrap it up. Travis, what do you say next episode, we do issues 5 through 7 plus the Raphael one shot. And we'll do an episode or two of the cartoon. How's that sound?
I am game for that, Adam. Anything. You know me. I'll even sit through the third Ninja Turtle movie.
Oh, well, I'm going to make you do that at some point. But I'll be doing it too, so we'll both be paid.
It's no Batman and Robin or Catwoman.
Right, exactly.
So, I can always look on the bright side. The thing that mostly frustrated me with that was Michelangelo being absent for so much in the movie because he was captured. Yeah. But we'll get into that when we talk about that
movie. Right. So that's what we're going to do next episode. Right now, I'm still debating on how frequently I want to put these out. Right now, we're going to go monthly. So once a month, we're going to sit down and do this. Because Travis and I do have a hockey podcast. And we're waiting to hear news on Green Arrow and the Canaries. And we'll be doing that as well if that gets picked up. So for right now, we're going to do this monthly. But it'll give you guys a chance, if you want to follow along, to read the issues that we're going to be reading and to watch the episodes that we're going to be watching.
He also has three other podcasts. So Adam has, pardon my friends, a shit ton on his plate. So
yeah.
If there's some big mega turtle news, we'll do a special episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If they announce a movie. So people will be on that if that happens, but yeah. We'll be tackling the best from the Turtles history. And we'll be doing it with a lot of joy.
We're definitely going to keep our ear to the ground about the reboot that we know that it's coming at some point. And when news on that breaks, Travis and I will get on here for 20 minutes and give our thoughts. But the general schedule for right now is going to be one a month. So for, you know, set aside some time to listen to us for, you know, once every month. Travis, if people want to, in the meantime, between episodes, if people want to talk to you about TMNT, where do they do that?
They can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can drop me a line and we can chat about Turtles anytime, day or night. I absolutely love it. I will chat about you about anything. If something I haven't watched, I'll get on that and then get back to you. I'll even chat with you about the Out of the Shells music tour.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, the one that took away their shells.
Doesn't that... Yeah, never mind.
That creeped the hell out of me growing up, Adam. That creeped the hell out of me. A rare swing and a miss for the Turtles.
You know, Peter should have got involved with that. That's cruelty to Adam. Anyway, if you want to talk to me about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I'd be glad to do so. You can do that at Adam_LeafsFan on Twitter. We also have a Facebook group for our podcast network, which is the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network. And if you go to the Facebook group, you can request admittance into the group, and either Travis, myself, or Ryan Hulsman will add you, and we can continue the conversation there. But that wraps it up for this week. We hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we did recording it. We want to wish you, all the best, and want to say cowabunga. And remember, it's Turtles forever, from the first pizza slice to the last.
It was a shell of a good time.
Cowabunga, dudes.
Later, guys.
Hey, what do you guys want to eat?
Pizza!
Cowabunga, dude.
Go!